Welcome to the Nerd Journey Podcast. Our goal is to help you, the technology professional, accelerate your career progression, increase your job satisfaction, and be more effective in your existing role.
We want to bring listeners like you the career advice we wish we'd been given earlier in our careers.
I'm John White at VJourneyman on Twitter, sharing co-host duties with Nick Cordy at NetworkNerd _.
We're two former IT operations guys who have moved on to pre-sales roles with technology vendors. We have our opinions, but we also like to highlight the journeys of others and see what we can learn from them.
We'd also like to ask for your feedback to make this a conversation, not a one-way broadcast. Email us at nerdjourneypodcast@gmail.com or DM us at nerdjourney on Twitter. So come join us on our nerd journey.
Let's take a trip. You've just joined us for episode 270. Our guest this week is Justin Kelly. He's the co-founder and CEO of Secure Bearing LLC. They're an IT services provider specializing in networking, security, and automation and orchestration. What would you say motivates someone to learn a new skill? Well, the answer might depend. Pay special attention as you listen to the interview to the way Justin went about learning some things and the reasons for each one. How to be a drummer in a heavy metal band. How to learn networking concepts and learn enough to get Cisco certified. And not just a basic level certification, an advanced level certification as well. And learning about Windows and Active Directory. And what is it that makes someone leave a positive company culture for a different job at a different company? You're going to hear the story of Justin making the move from his first IT job to working for a managed services provider, a place that he calls the Hurt Locker. We'll hear about his reasons for doing it and the consequences of that decision, both positive and negative. Here we go with part one of our discussion with Justin Kelly.
Justin Kelly, welcome to the Nerd Journey Podcast.
Thank you for having me. Glad to be here.
Can you tell us a little bit about what it is that you do today?
Yeah, sure. I'll start off with a quick introduction. My name's Justin Kelly. I've been in the industry for about 14 years with a real IT job and had an interest in computers since I was a young kid. I'm the CEO and co-founder of Secure Bearing LLC. We're an IT services provider, mostly for Fortune 500 companies. We do the full project life cycle from architecture and design, implementation, migrations of data center, campus network, and network security. We also help our customers automate the operations of their networking and network security.
You mentioned that interest in computers as a youngster. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's going way back. For me, life feels like it started around 8. At least that's where I feel like I was started banking memories. But our family was gifted some, I think it ran IBM DOS, this old machine. And it had the 5 1/4, or was it 5 1/2, the floppy disks. And one of the games I had, Bushido Blade, I remember the most. But anyway, I took it apart one weekend. It never worked again. That was the spark for me. My childhood best friend who lived just two doors down, his dad was big into computers, and so he always had computers. So I spent a lot of time tinkering and learning about computers. So growing up, I always knew I wanted to do something with computers, right? I'm putting air quotes around that word. You know, when I got older, come to find out that there were, at that time, still a considerable number of niches in computers or IT.
It kind of hits at this pattern that we've seen, which is the tinkerer. Oh, I'm going to take this thing apart without any fear that it won't work. And I won't be able to put it back together.
Yeah, or naive confidence, one of the two.
Yeah, but has that pattern kind of stayed with you? Like, if it breaks, it breaks, but, you know, I'll learn something.
That's absolutely how I feel I approach most things, maybe a little bit of an overkill kind of way in my speech patterns and just verifying everything that I'm reading, then I'm writing when I'm having a conversation, much to my spouse's chagrin. So yeah, I think that I've always been a bit of a tinkerer.
It's interesting when the tinkering leads you or lands you onto this thing that you decide you want to do. What was the real push that got you into a technology-focused job? Was it someone you met in school, a parental influence, maybe some other avenue?
I love the question. I actually was a heavy metal drummer at the time, making $15 at the door, and I met this person who suggested that I try Cisco, and he lent me some gear. His father-in-law owned a training company and gave me one of his CCNA books from back in the day. It just changed my whole perspective, and I was hooked. I want to say I was about 21, 22, and that started my journey, and it was a really long journey, at least it felt like it, in trying to break into an IT job, which I found very much to be, and I feel like others have corroborated this. The industry is very much a catch-22, right? You need experience to get the job, but you need the job to net or bank the experience.
Yeah, we're really not great about entry-level positions, no experience positions. It's a really great point, actually. I want to back up a little bit. You said heavy metal drummer was your preceding job, and I think that's probably up there with going to school to be a Swedish pop star.
Yeah, Dutch Pop Academy.
Yeah, the furthest thing away or, you know, from what somebody would say would be, and I'll use your air quotes, like traditional track to IT, right? Can you tell me a little bit about the crossover skills? I imagine in order to become a skilled drummer, there's all kinds of things that you need to do that probably served you pretty well in your drive to become or to get into IT.
Yeah, I want to clarify and say that that was not my day job, the $15 a week or so that we were making. I was working at various warehouses at the time. But for me, the main skill that I came out and credit really my ability to go into the woodshed and just, in my own terminology, to suffer, right? To sweat it out, to put in the time and to persevere through the pain. The amount of practicing that we did as a band. And I'll say that the roots of that were, at the time for me, to connect with my brother, who I didn't have a close relationship with growing up. And he played a guitar. He had a friend who liked to sing. And I was like, I'm going to teach myself how to play the drums and try to get in. And, you know, we turned nothing into something, you know, at least for us. We never went anywhere. We just had fun with it. But I learned to persevere through a lot of practicing.
So it was your idea to develop the expertise to try and get into the band, not that they necessarily wanted you to be in it?
That's right.
Did you just confront them one day and say, hey, look what I can do. I want to be part of your band. How did that go?
Well, I bought a book on beginning drumming, and there was already a ragged, destroyed kit that was out there in the garage where my brother and his friend would jam. And I just sat down at it one day when I felt like I could put a 4-4 together, four to the floor, and just play while they were jamming. And they didn't kick me out immediately. So I took that as, hey, maybe I'll keep going.
I mean, immediately, the desire to say, oh, well, I'm going to go teach myself how to do this. It sounds like that almost matches exactly what happened with the CCNA journey, right? Someone suggests it and you say, oh, well, I'll go teach myself. And like a CCNA book, I imagine that's like picking up a drumming book and where it goes like, okay, well, here's like the first 5 rudiments or the first 20 rudiments or the first 50 rudiments that you need to know. I'm just wondering if you saw that same parallel at the time, or looking back at it, you see it now.
Well, I mean, the motivation was different. Again, I knew I wanted to work in IT, and I was close, but not close enough. And this suggestion from this close friend came along with the notion, or the not promissory note, but possibility, right, of pulling myself out of poverty. So I was very motivated to try something different. And I absolutely fell back in love with computers. Not that I had really fallen out of it, but just in a different way. You know, for many years before that, friends and colleagues would get together and, you know, network their computers and we'd have LAN parties. And I didn't know what a subnet mask was. I just plugged in the numbers until the computer would work. And I remember we turned on IPX, SPX for, I think it was StarCraft, or maybe it was Command and Conquer. I don't remember. But anyway, the point being, I knew nothing about networking. And it was compelling to crack that book and see the possibility for learning something new.
Sometimes we get a helping hand because people know what we want to do. Had you, in addition to the gaming and the tinkering, had you explicitly told the person or people who gave you that equipment that you wanted to break into technology at any point? You know, did the people around you know this? I'm just curious if it was a stated, I'd love to be able to do this.
So I worked at a warehouse at the time where we did data security, right? I'm going to throw some air quotes around that as well, where companies would ship large quantities of stuff that had PII or configuration or what have you that we would either need to destroy or completely factory reset and wipe and then destroy. So I touched a lot of old CatOS boxes and chassis hardware. And so, you know, I would turn them on and I could get into ROM on and all that and wipe them. But that was the extent of my experience at the time. So this friend who suggested that I get into Cisco had heard me talking about it in passing. I think he gave me the benefit of the doubt. And the statement he used, I don't remember it exactly, so I'm going to paraphrase, but was, you know Cisco, so why don't you go for your CCNA? I didn't know anything about it.
That's really cool to have somebody kind of to give you the push, right? I mean, I think I definitely had that. I had, you know, somebody say, wait, where do you work? Why are you doing that? Why don't you do something bigger? You know, it sounds like you're not at the right scale or not thinking about the right scale, or you have blinders on, and let me help you take those blinders off, and here, follow me through the dark, you know? I know where the light switch is. That kind of guidance is so powerful in our careers. Not a question.
It was very powerful. It was a big source of motivation because there was a vote of confidence that came in unsolicited, which just wasn't something historically that I was used to. And in addition to that suggestion, he also provided an open invitation to, at the time, a meetup group of some extremely smart people, much smarter than I, the CCIE meetup of all of these folks who were trying to get their CCIE. And just about every single one of them went on to get one or multiple CCIEs. But just joining those calls and listening to them talk and, yeah, just being in awe of people who have mastered a craft was another source of motivation.
And CCNA is Cisco Certified Network Administrator. CCIE is Cisco Certified Something Engineer.
It's Cisco Certified Internetwork Expert.
And when you were a part of this community group and your friend encouraged you to be a part of it, it sounds like the people who were there who had a much broader or deeper body of knowledge were quite welcoming and had no issue, right? No issue with you being a beginner, no issue with you asking questions. The reason I'm saying this is I think a lot of people are afraid to be around people who know way more about something than they do and sounding like a dummy.
It's such a good point. And I'll just throw the term out there. There weren't any gatekeepers. And it was fantastic. And one of them actually took me under his wing for several years when I had finished the written exam, which was many, many, many years later. So we had stayed in touch. And he just hounded me. When are you going to take the lab? What does your prep look like? What did you accomplish this week? So yeah, just to drive the point that it was a very welcoming community. And even to this day, I like to be surrounded by people smarter than me. There's just absolutely no room for my own personal growth. That's just my opinion. When I'm quote unquote the smartest person in the room, which that's not what I'm about.
It's actually a line that I've used a bunch of times, you know, and I think I've articulated to myself as, you know, I want to be surrounded by people that are smarter than me and maybe even smart in a way that's different than the way that I'm smart, right? I don't want everybody around me to be exactly like me, because then we'll all have the same blind spot. And then, you know, just to extend that, we'll all get hit by the same truck at the same time. It's awesome that you had that community that you're able to join and that it was so welcoming. And then at the same time, people were pushing you. That's such a gift to have somebody who's pushing you and holding you accountable for your growth and progression. Have you had a chance to give back in that way to other people?
I certainly want to hope that that's been the case. You know, as the owner of a company, I feel like I've been able to give back a considerable amount and still am very mindful about mentoring and motivating and providing feedback and watching people grow. So I hope that they would agree.
Yeah, that's something that it has to be assessed by a third party, right? But I think that just the same way that not everybody learns the same way, not everybody gives back the same way, right? And just because you were held accountable and pushed to grow in a specific way doesn't mean that that's the only way to give back and to give opportunity. And some people push and some people nudge, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about maybe your view of that certification path within Cisco? I don't know if you have a strong opinion on this or if you're, far away from it now, but I feel like that's changed, especially with cloud architecture and things like that. And I think for a long time, the certified architect was like this whole other thing, like that was like there wasn't, in my mind, like a clear path to it.
It's not the first time I've got this question, and maybe I'm jaded, but there's pros and cons to any certification program, right? Be it Cisco or Palo Alto or Juniper. I like to use Juniper as an example, at least in earlier studies, but I came out of that whole journey onto the CCIE, and I'll just say I failed so many times. So I want to just normalize that from the outset. I failed the CCNA on my first try. I failed the route exam when it was route switch T-shoot 3 times. And it took me 3 attempts to pass the CCIE. So I'll just take a small little tangent there and say, I'm so glad I failed because I learned so much more. And if I had passed the first time on any of those exams, and especially the CCIE, because for me personally at the time, it just had so much weight in my own identity and my own investment in myself. If I had passed, I would have been a much worse engineer. That's just my viewpoint. So the failures were bigger wins than the pass. But all that to say, as a buildup, I came out on the other side of that with a lot of pedantic knowledge, a lot of book knowledge, a lot of, yeah, I memorized the detail of this edge case that you could design yourself into a corner with that you're only going to see during the CCIE lab, right? And if you see it in the real world, run. I like to tell people, and I think this is something I read, so this isn't original, but I agree with it. And that is the Cisco CCIE, you walk away with about 20% of usable knowledge and about 80% of it disappears. And the JNCIE at the time, which I didn't take the test, but was very deep into Juniper, and knew several folks who had passed it, you walk away with about 80% usable knowledge and 20% of it, you know, just blows away in the wind. So that's my take.
So it sounds like if I'm someone who wants to get into networking, any certification is going to teach me something, but it sounds like the Juniper certification from your experience might be a little bit more valuable to start off with.
Well, that was my opinion in 2015. So I would say that's so stale now, you should just chalk me up to not that valuable of an opinion. But, you know, I hold many other certifications, and I think you put it well. You're going to learn usable stuff, and you're going to come out with the vendor-specific marketing lingo, and, you know, maybe someone who wrote the test wanted to get creative, but it may not be applicable to the real world.
Sure. And what motivated you to go take those tests again after you failed? Because I'm someone who has failed certification tests multiple times, and it can be pretty debilitating. So what would you tell someone who's gone to take a certification test they thought they were ready for, they failed? What do they do now?
Well, there's two questions there. I'll try to answer the second one first. As soon as you take the test, whether you pass or fail, go sit in your car, write everything down that you can remember, and if you fail, it's not that big of a deal. You reassess where you believe you are, because not every certification exam gives you the granular feedback that you need to study the stuff that's going to help you pass the next time. But just do your best and don't give up. I have a colleague who took the CCIE security 6 times. It was either 6 or 7. He either failed 6 and passed on his 7th, or he failed 5 and passed on his 6th. Don't quit. If it matters to you, don't quit. You're not doing yourself a disservice to keep studying and going through the motions, building those chops. You'll be better, at least in the field that you're studying, if you keep going back.
Do you weight the exams and certifications that include a lab component more heavily than the ones that are just kind of book questions and answers when you're assessing somebody, I guess, for their skills?
Yeah, so I don't care about certifications when I'm assessing someone for their skills. I'll just lead with that. The people that work for me now take certifications for 2 reasons. One is because we have requirements from our vendors in order to maintain compliance. Or 2, they have a personal goal to accomplish certification. And both are very well supported in our organization. When we're hiring, just like it's 3 guys right now talking to each other, you know, we try to make it 3 or 4 people just having a conversation, trying to understand how this person ticks, how they approach life in a business setting. Of course, it's not a personal interview. And, you know, harkening back on a point that you made, John, being surrounded by a bunch of clones of yourself, you know, we're all going to get hit by the bus, the same bus at the same time. So we very much are looking for fresh perspectives, challenging viewpoints, and that's something that's very valuable. I kind of flipped that question on its head. I hope you don't mind.
No, I don't mind. I actually was going to follow up with, now how is the way that you interview people and kind of sniff out what they can do in light of certification or no certification different or the same as what you went through when you interviewed for your first networking job?
The interviews that I had to go through were a mixed bag of stump the chump, and we don't play that game. So I definitely brought the certifications into those interviews as badges, right, that I was wearing, hoping that they would help me stand out. And they certainly helped me answer quite a few of those pedantic style questions, right? And we just don't interview like that. We do ask about certifications, and generally professionals in this industry who are serious are pursuing some form of certification or continuous learning. And that second part is very important to our organization, because without continuous learning in this industry, and specifically what we do, you know, we lose our competitive edge. We're always learning. There's always new stuff emerging and coming out.
Yeah, absolutely. I can totally see wanting to inspect someone's drive to keep learning. What do they want to learn next or in the future? I like the focus on how certifications are needed, but they're not the only consideration point that we look through when determining if someone is the right person for the job.
Yeah. Could you maybe give an example about continuous learning that doesn't really have anything to do with certification track learning?
In my mind, and what I look for, are individuals who are labbing, essentially, right? If we can sum it up, it's if you don't have an enterprise network to work on and you don't know how to build one, just build something, right? And I think, I believe that a part of certification preparation ought to just be supplementing with labs and going through the paces of standing up whatever it is that you're learning and tinkering with it, turning the screws on it until it breaks. And that's really where the aha moments are. So, you know, there's so much software out there that's available now that wasn't when I was prepping for certifications. It was just Packet Tracer at the time. So it was either that or you invested in hardware, which I also did. But now you have things like EVNG, which is fantastic, and GNS3 and CML. The sky really is the limit to how much hands-on people can get, even if they don't have access to a production network.
Here's an interesting point after what you just said, Justin. I think maybe a lot of people don't know the value of moving to a service provider, consulting firm, in terms of what they have the potential to learn because of your mandate to get those certifications. So if somebody wanted to get a bunch of certifications, it's kind of a well-made match from their desire, something that helps the company, double check mark. Is it a risk to take in someone who doesn't have the type of certifications the company needs on the premise of them getting them, or what's your take on that?
Now you're asking me a business question. You know, we have weights for this, that is, in determining a cost-effective hire, right? So we know how much it costs to train a resource from no experience to the certified status, or, you know, just a general timeline based on previous candidates, and how much we're saving if we are hiring an employee who has the certification already. It really just depends on the need at the time for the role and many other things like cash flow, timeline for what the role ought to be fulfilling from a delivery standpoint for the business, and quite frankly, the individuals that we're interviewing. And I'll just throw a caveat in there because, you know, we've made mistakes in hiring and talked to folks that, you know, just blew our doors off and they didn't work out. So,
yeah, it's a tough science to master, I'm sure.
A mixture of art and science.
Yeah. And hitting your head against the wall.
I have to say that I just passed the 1 year mark in my career advancement as a hiring manager, and interviewing and hiring has been one of the more difficult things that I've had to learn how to do. And it doesn't seem like it is a standard thing. It is so dependent on geography that the role is servicing, availability of people in that specific geography. You know, there's little micro niches, you know, oh, the customers are all here and therefore you need to hire in this, you know, this radius, and the people who are available there are all expecting this much money, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's an interesting thing. And then, you know, there's different paths, right? Like there's the model that I've always seen followed is like you get a certain number of people who get screened and then a certain number of people who advance to maybe a technical screen and a business screen. And then maybe you're doing some technical presentations to like a group of people. And I've had to learn to maybe abandon that. Like it's such a slow process to get a full panel of people with, you know, three or four candidates, you know, reaching that final panel is just too slow. Again, not a question, but just an affirmation. It's really difficult. And then you can go through all that and still the person might not work out. How do you figure out that, you know, there's like a mismatch, you know, when people are trying their best to hide all that mismatch?
Well, when you solve the equation, John, please call me. Let me know.
Oh yeah. As soon as I solve that equation, I mean, then I'm going into business, right? That's my golden goose. I think we started diving into this, but you know, you actually walked into that process of learning how to get into Cisco networking, and then you did eventually break out right, and get your first position. Can you tell us what that process looked like?
Yeah, it was a lot of grinding and disappointment and interviews without callbacks and perseverance, really. I want to say it was 2008 when I passed the CCNA, and I had gotten the CompTIA certifications before that. You know, there was incentive for me at the warehouse I was working at to get the A+. It was like a dollar bump in pay. And, you know, I picked up the Network Plus and the Security Plus and CCNA by 2008. And it wasn't until 2011 that I got my first real IT job. I also was going back to college at the time. And I think that's really what helped me get the job. It wasn't my certifications. It was mostly my limited Windows Active Directory knowledge at the time and the fact that I was in an undergrad program.
Okay, I want to know more about that. Did you make a connection in the undergrad program that led you there? Like someone else was in the class that had an opening, or they worked with companies that hire straight out of school? I'm curious how that ended up going.
The short answer is no, though that would be a cool story. I do want to say that right out of high school, when I graduated in 2004, I went to community college. I grew up in Reno and went to Truckee Meadows Community College for one quarter. It wasn't even a full semester. And I took the ICND1 class, which was for networking, and I absolutely hated it. And I dropped out. So fast forward to 2011, I started an undergrad program online with WGU, Western Governors University, because it was affordable and there was a whole host of Windows certifications that were involved in the program. There were not very many positions. There was a lot of competition, and most of them were jack-of-all-trade jobs, and Windows was just part of it. So back to the question. The school that I worked for was a private school, and it was a value education above all else kind of school. And the headmaster who interviewed me, one of the first questions he asked was I continuing my education? And I could tell that the answer to that very much mattered to him. And I was able to answer yes, fortunately. So I think just by virtue of being in college at the time, I think that's what got me in the door.
So through trial and experience, interviewing and getting turned down, you found out that the Windows piece was a gap that you needed to fill. And that's part of the reason you went back to school.
That's accurate, yeah.
Okay.
Which is ironic. Our company does not do any Windows work.
Well, it's the difference between, you know, your current business and your path to get your foot in the door, right? There's,
of course,
you say it out loud and it, you know, obviously makes sense to me. There's probably way more organizations who need to hire a generalist who can do a little bit of a lot of things than there are larger organizations who have specializations, right? Who have like, oh no, we have a networking team and we have a Windows team and we have a storage team and we have a virtualization team and we have a cloud team and a separate architecture team that requires a certain amount of size and sophistication and maybe history and, I don't know, silo making, which is maybe not such a great thing. But the majority of organizations out there, you know, they need a generalist. They need somebody who can fiddle with a lot of different things. Understanding the market that you're trying to break into, that's a valuable lesson.
Yeah, I think so. And your description of generalist was very much the position. It was everything. Systems work, networking, firewall work, down to helping teachers with printers and students with broken laptops and projectors and all that fun stuff.
It's an interesting nuance of working a technology job in education, because not only did you have to help teachers and administrative staff, you had to help students. I don't know that everybody has to do that in the role they're in other types of organizations. So I'm just curious, how did you approach troubleshooting and helping the adults versus maybe the students?
I approached it all the same. And that was just, you know, with a lot of patience and compassion and patience. Working for a private school with a much smaller student body was a great experience. All of the students were very respectful. You know, the teachers were all extremely smart and very highly educated. It was a place of business. That was the vibe. That was the atmosphere. So I was fortunate to work in a place where respect was table stakes.
That says something about culture, doesn't it? Culture of the workplace. I wonder if that's something that you're able to carry forward because you eventually became a business owner, or if you know, even as you were looking for your next job.
Yeah, I mean, culture is very, very important, and it's all about the people. And I've been exposed to a lot of different cultures, and that one was fun. The guy I worked for, he was a bass player, and one of the coaches, I forget what sport he was coaching, he was a guitarist. So I actually got to bust out the drum set at his assemblies and play with my boss and coworkers. And it was a short experience. I was only there for about a year, maybe less, but a very enjoyable break into IT. And it was my next job where I got to see the other side of the house, which was more of a hurt locker.
So let's go there. Here's my question to you, Justin. When someone works in a culture they enjoy, for a boss they like, it can be difficult to want to go somewhere else. So I'm just curious, what were the motivations for you wanting to move to a different company? And then how did you deal with maybe the expectation of what it was going to be versus what it turned out to be?
Yeah, so nothing ever turned out the way I thought that it would. I'll just put it that way, and rarely does. My wife has described me and friends as well as, especially when I was younger, being a little bit, probably more than a little bit, insatiable in my pursuit of, you know, the next thing. So I moved on and up in my career with a little bit of reckless abandon. Probably didn't give it enough thoughtful consideration till much later in my career. So, but I will say that interviewing at my next role with a Cisco Systems managed services partner, master managed services partner, was like a dream come true. Having started on the track of Cisco, there was nothing that was going to stop me from, unless I could have seen what was in front of me, I suppose, there was nothing that was going to stop me from moving to that role.
Was that the dream position at that time?
Yes. Yes, it was. And everyone that I worked with at the time was, you know, this is another check mark in the positive culture column. Everyone was very supportive and happy for me. And it was very refreshing to experience leaving a job as something that's positive from the employer that you're departing from.
I wonder if, in retrospect, when you're hiring people and you, one of your requirements is continuing education, is that you realize that you're not going to hold on to them for that long. You know, if they're still on their own personal growth path, that means eventually they're going to outgrow the position that you're hiring them for. That's only a speculation. So what was that transition like, or the interview process, I guess? Like, was that a positive interview process, or was it grinding and grueling, or what did that look like?
I'm going to do my best to tiptoe around this one. It was the single, not the worst, it was the second worst. I can actually think of one worse, but it was the second worst interview process that I have been. No, I lied. It is the worst. It was the absolute worst experience of my career, and nothing, like I said, was going to stop me from taking the job.
Was the motivation to take it, despite the really challenging experience, was that monetary, technology-based, status, and seniority-based, or maybe some of all of those?
I had, I'd say, a dual vested interest. One, the job was here where I am now in Austin, Texas. And my wife now, girlfriend at the time, lived in Austin. So I really wanted to move here. Now, the prospect of working as a red badge for Cisco, and I'm sure we'll get into more of it, but working with every technology that there is was intoxicating.
Sure, because you had only worked with, in an enterprise environment, the technology that the school had, right? And when you go and work for a partner or a managed services partner, whatever you want to call it. They have all those vendor relationships with different OEMs of networking equipment and software. Just like you said, you know, your company has to have different certifications on staff to be able to provide services around those technologies. That company was similar, and it's a greater level of exposure to what's out there. That's definitely appealing.
I couldn't have put it better myself. There was just no comparison. At the school I worked at, it was refurbished gear that was on its last leg, and none of it was Cisco.
You used a phrase that I've heard before, but I don't think I've ever understood, and that is the Cisco red patch. What does that mean?
Yeah, so that's Cisco terminology for somebody who wears a badge that says, hey, I'm Cisco, when they pick up the phone, but they're actually a contractor. So they're a third party, you know, a sub or a sub-sub. And then the other one is the blue badge. That's a Cisco employee. Maybe there's other badge colors, but those are the only two I'm familiar with.
Got it. Okay, thanks for that clarification.
You said the interview was challenging and one of the hardest worst you've been through. What about the overall working environment you were in after that, despite being able to play with maybe new toys that you wanted to play with? How was your adjustment to that? And at what point did you decide, well, this maybe isn't where I want to stay forever?
So I'll color in some lines on the interview and just say that it wasn't a difficult interview in the technical aspect. I wasn't challenged technically. It was just unpleasant in culture and communication styles. I'll just leave it at that. The job, like I mentioned before, was the Hurt Locker. It was just more work than anyone could accomplish. And it was, you're thrown into the ocean and just a little tiny raft to hold on to and told to sink or swim. I thrived in that environment and learned more in 13 months than I thought was possible. You know, I feel like I packed in 4 years into 13 months and got exposed to every kind of circuit, vendor network, security appliance, company cultures and politics and standard operating procedures and outages and just nervous system fry, right? Just constant, just level 11 volume. I won't say you get used to it, but major issues don't faze you as much after sustained trauma. That's the best way that I can describe it.
That's a pattern that we've heard, maybe not this like the extreme, but the idea of being exposed to so many different types of organizations, how they're organized, the problems that they're facing, the cultures that they have, the operational differences from organization to organization. Did that help you learn what it is that you liked and didn't like, the types of things that you would look for in another position, in a more ideal position?
I don't know if I found anything while working there that I didn't like. And what I haven't mentioned yet is that I got my first taste of automation at this company, and I was completely hooked. And I took that, all that I learned, things like turning unstructured data into structured data and putting together a runbook automation that an L1 or L2 would typically go through. And I built on that foundation and implemented systems at every company I worked for after that. So yeah, I didn't really find anything that I didn't want to do. And I think that I was asked about monetary drive. There was no monetary drive. I was paid terribly. And when I moved on to the role after that, the bump in pay was significant. And, you know, that was one of the drivers for me leaving, in addition to not wanting to pop out gray hairs at 20-something because of how stressful the job was.
When we're in a job that's extremely stressful, as you said, it can affect us in a number of ways, whether it's gray hair, trouble sleeping, anxiety. Did you notice that it was doing that? Or did you have to have help from your future wife on noticing, hey man, you might need to slow down a little bit?
having my girlfriend and wife now support was, and still is, a foundational block in my success, just in general. She calls it the Sagittarius, and she always pulls a bow, right? She pulls back the arrow with her left hand, and she's holding the bow with her right hand, just to describe how I approach things. The relationships that I did have prior to that, my partners felt that the things that I was prioritizing, which was studying, was taking away from the relationship. It was very taxing. I met someone who was very secure in themselves, very independent, and just observed me from a distance and supported that behavior, which is something I had never experienced before either. So having a support system is invaluable. And to your question, I had absolutely no idea that I was burning the candle at both ends in the middle. And it took gentle nudging and maybe not so gentle nudging to help me realize that.
I really hated to cut it there, but we'll have to save the rest for next week. Did you hear Justin's recommendation in that episode that even if we don't have access to an enterprise network or even networking equipment, we should just go build something? There are a lot of tools out there that can help us simulate these type of environments, and he actually mentioned a few that I had not heard of. EVE-NG, EVE-NG, GNS3, and CML, Cisco Modeling Labs, look like some pretty cool tools if you're looking to sharpen your skills when it comes to networking. And any resource that someone mentions like that is always in our show notes at nerd-journey.com. You can read those for any episode, helpful links to things that people have shared in our discussions. Building something can really come in handy to cement the learning you might be doing toward a certification or just tinkering with a new technology that you haven't tinkered with before. I really liked Justin's perspective as a business owner hiring people who may or may not be certified after we heard about his experience being the person pursuing the certification. He said that they know how much it'll cost to train someone to get the certification that his company needs. Since they're a managed services provider or IT services provider, they have to have people who are certified in different technologies on staff. So it might be less costly for them to hire someone who already has that certification than to train someone to get it. So that's something you'd want to pay special attention to in job descriptions and requirements. Is the certification a requirement? Or maybe that's a condition of employment that you get a certification within a certain time period when taking a job at a services provider type company. But it's worth asking the question at any company when you're interviewing for a job, if it's not spelled out and you want to work towards certifications, will the company pay for certifications? How do they view that? Do they have training budgets for people and departments? Is that something that they would do for you? If they can't increase the salary when you're negotiating on a job offer, maybe they can give you a training budget. Something that really spoke to me was this theme of getting support or needing support from others and how critical that is to our success. You heard about it in Justin's story. He had a supportive community of people who were very skilled in networking. The friend that gave him the network gear and gave him the CCNA book and then invited him to this community of others with a ton of expertise that Justin was able to learn from. And then part of the support he got from that community was not only being welcomed to the group and not treated any differently because he was a beginner, but he basically ended up becoming close to someone who held him accountable and pushed him to make sure that he got that CCIE certification. Holding someone accountable is a form of supporting them. being supported from other people in our lives is really important when we're trying to do something that's difficult, or we need to do something that's going to take more time than perhaps we have spent in the past doing something. Justin's wife was very supportive of his ambition to learn new things and take on new challenges, but she was also supportive from the aspect of recognizing that he was in an environment that was extremely stressful. And she had to point out that things were that way because he wasn't able to see it. So sometimes being supportive is not just holding people accountable for doing something. It's helping them see things they can't see, giving them honest feedback on something that might need to change.
Farewell, listeners. Tune in next time as the journey continues. I'm John White at B Journeyman, for Nick Cordy at Network Nerd _, signing off.
Adios.